I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
99.9 KISW. This is the Beard from Metal Shop, and I'm hanging out with the dudes from Foes. Say hi, guys.
Yo. Hey, what's going on?
Go around the room, introduce yourselves, say who you are and what you do in the band.
My name's Micah. I do vocals.
I'm Sonny. I play guitar.
I'm Baby Beatus. I do that bass thumping.
And I'm Garrett, and I play the drums.
So let's jump in. How did you guys form? What's the history of Foes?
The history of Foes, it goes back about 6 years. I think Sonny and I started when we were in another project, dicking around with some Cro-Magnon hardcore stuff at the time.
Jamming in the garage.
Yeah. we had this drum set that was covered in duct tape. And it was Gorillas Eat Thrash Browns at the time, I think. Yep. And it morphed into so many different things before it got to Foes.
We were just playing Converge covers, just kind of whatever we wanted, just to kind of figure out what we wanted to go for sound-wise. And then it just morphed into what it is now, which is I don't even really know how to explain it.
It's every badass genre formed into one. We've got the grind, we've got the beat down, we've got the hardcore, we've got even death metal aspects. Small technical aspects, but it's just everything rolled in. It's a beefy, crunchy 5-layer burrito, bro.
Basically, if I took all my favorite bands and threw them in a garbage disposal and then ate it, that would be Foes.
Awesome. That's an apt description. Bands in a garbage disposal. That's very cool. So I know you guys are from Bend, Oregon, fairly small town. Do you feel that being from a smaller music community helped influence your musical directions or kind of forced you into playing with other people with wider varieties of musical tastes than you would have otherwise?
Well, it's pretty constricted there. So the whole scene is pretty incestuous. Our bass player, Baby Beatus, he's in six bands. So there's not a lot to choose from.
I am the music scene.
Yeah, pretty much.
Me and Garrett have been playing music together for probably 12 years almost.
Yeah.
Throughout multiple different bands. Every band's been way different. This band here is more or less us not focusing on a genre of music and just trying to just play
what we want
to play.
Yeah.
And not worrying about how it sounds,
Do you feel not focusing on one genre versus another has kind of freed you up musically
to write
some cooler stuff?
Yeah, we all have such different tastes in music that I think that really impacts the sound a lot.
And that's also a benefit for us being out in Bend and having a real strong but smaller underground music community is we all know each other. You know, we all know each other, but we all grew up with a variety of musical tastes. And then, finally coming together and being able to just combine everything to what it is now into Foes. There is no restrictions, you know. We literally have taken everything that we've listened to and learned and taken influence on and then just started throwing it all together in one big old potluck. And it's just worked great. It's worked excellent, I think.
Sure.
5 years of sitting in the garage.
That's before, what it'll do to you, kids.
Before showing anyone anything.
It was funny, too, because Garrett and Sonny had been together with a different vocalist and a different bass player at the time for probably, 2 years?
A little over a year and a half.
And I was working down on a farm, and one day I was visiting Ben, and Garrett was like, hey, dude, you want to do vocals in a band? And I was like, sure. So I was driving up 1 week a month from way down in southern Oregon, coming up doing a practice, so it was a pretty slow process to get our first chunk of music together even really going.
The first whole thing we had together was basically Micah come down and record the album, and we did everything.
Lyrics on a typewriter and then got into the sound booth for 10 songs.
Yeah.
That's awesome. Let's delve in a little bit more about what your songwriting process is like. I mean, I know there's a lot of travel involved because some of you live in different places. So who's the guy coming up with the riffs, and is it a collaborative effort, or how's that work? Take me through the process of a Foes song from start to finish.
Basically, I'm sitting in my bedroom and I write one riff. I don't try to write a song or try to write you know, more than one or two riffs, and then I present them to Garrett when we get together with, you know, and he's on drums, and then we just, we play that, and then we just see what kind of naturally flows out of it, and maybe what he's thinking, you know, what he wants to do with it. Yeah. We usually start just with a basic rhythm, and it might be one thing, and then that, we just build off of that one riff. Sometimes throughout a whole song, it's based off of just one riff.
Right.
You know, and then we just...
As soon as I hear the riff, I hear like 10 other riffs.
Yeah.
It's a very old school, hardcore
yeah.
approach to songwriting
yeah.
is what I'm getting from you.
Yeah. And we like to just mess up the rhythm whenever we can without getting too complicated, but we like to add in little weird things there to make it kind of, you know, mess with you a little bit when you're listening to it. You
of
know,
course.
If you know what you're listening for.
So you're paying attention to...
Totally.
How the listener is going to be experiencing
yeah.
the music.
Yeah.
Oh, it's definitely an experience. We want our listeners to be captivated by the sounds flowing through their ears.
It's like it's the control aspect. Like, we want full control over what's happening, and we don't want you to breathe until we want you to breathe, basically.
Yeah.
Let's talk about how you got into heavy music. What was the light bulb moment? What was the journey? What was and all musicians, everybody in heavy music has that one moment that they can be like, oh yeah, I heard this band or saw this artist, and that was it. So I want to hear about the light bulb moments.
I can vividly recall exactly what it was for me. I was raised in the church, super, super secular fearing kind of situation. So I was basically only allowed to buy music from the Christian bookstore, and I went in and I saw this album, and it was this band Ludacris, which would later become Norma Jean. And I remember they had this little like sampling CD player you could put headphones on. I put it in. It was the first time I'd ever heard guttural vocals,
yeah,
or like someone just like actually screaming. And I was like, dude, what the fuck is this? And my mom's like, well, it's a Christian bookstore, so here you go. And yeah, that's how it all started.
You can't escape the metal, dude.
You can't escape the metal. And I mean, like, looking back, it's kind of a funny way to be influenced, because I feel like a lot of my friends, it was like things like Metallica and Slayer, or even like starting off with like punk bands. And for me, the first time I ever heard anything like that was just this dude just like, ugh! And I was like, I'm never listening to anything else. Like, this is it. I want to do this stuff.
I think that's part of the importance of having bands that are kind of in circles like that. Like when you have Christian metal bands and things like that, I mean, those are gateway bands to people that otherwise wouldn't be exposed to that genre.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
Kind of
I would say that, you know, if you looked at heavy metal as a hard drug, you know, that was my, like, first hit of weed experience.
Right.
You know, I was like, whoa.
Yeah, that's too
different.
Metal like, is right too there. Mellow to be whoa. Weed. I would have to say, definitely, like, the reason that I got into heavy music was my dad, Mike. You know, definitely, like, I remember him telling me stories of, like, taking me home from the hospital and like, banging my head to the rhythm of Beneath the Remains from Sepultura,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
And, like, but definitely, like, what you're saying, like, that light bulb that came off, hands down, dude, Judas Priest. I remember sitting in the living room, and Dad had all of his old 80s cassettes going on, and Judas Priest, Screaming for Vengeance came on, and then we listened to that tape, and then next it was Defenders of the Faith, dude, and just, like, that 80s heavy metal is just really what got it into me, you know, and, like, he's really the reason why I got into the heavier music, like, not only just always listening to it, but he's been living that lifestyle for over 20 years, playing shows, doing shows, putting on shows, you know, so
yeah.
It's just, like, a family business on my end, but, like, death metal... Like, dude, Bolt Thrower and Sepultura, hate me or not, dude, I don't care. Like, straight up, man, Bolt Thrower and Sepultura, like, Arise and Beneath the Remains, that's when I think of my childhood in terms of, like, where I was at metal-wise and what really got me into it. Like, dude, I cry every time I hear Desperate Cry.
Yeah.
No joke. Like, that solo, dude, just, it brings a tear to my eyes. So, like, me, definitely, like, my dad definitely influenced the metal lifestyle and the music and stuff, but it started off with, like, the 80s heavy metal, and then they turned into death metal, and now that I'm an adult, like, I'll listen to whatever. Like, I'm even in hip-hop bands now, you know, like,
yeah.
I do whatever, but definitely for me, my light bulb moment was Judas Priest, hands down.
Sonny, let's hear from you, man.
So, I can honestly say, Garrett probably would agree with me on this one,
yeah,
here, new metal kind of got me into...
Oh, dude, 100%.
Yeah,
100%. Into heavy music. I think one of the first heavy albums I bought was probably Korn.
Okay, yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which record was it?
I had Follow the Leader and Life is Peachy.
Everybody had those
records.
Dude,
for real.
Like, everybody had those albums.
I mean, I grew up listening to a lot of classic rock with my parents, which kind of, I guess, got me into, like, a heavier type of music. They hated me as soon as I started listening to bands like that. And then Slipknot. And from there, I got into a lot of kind of metalcore bands. You know, like Unearth was a huge band that I listened to when I was younger. And it just kind of progressed from there. I started getting into a lot heavier music, a lot of death metal, you know, and hardcore music. You know, when we first started playing music, obviously, like a lot of guys, I was just jamming like Metallica riffs and stuff like
yeah.
that, you know, then like Lamb of God and stuff.
That's
and then,
how you'd meet the friends at like high school. You'd see
totally
doing like a guitar and you're like, oh,
you know, and I started jamming with other people and having other people show me their music, and that just opened up the gates to everything.
Yeah. Right.
Now I have a very broad spectrum of music.
Yeah.
I listen to everything.
Jamming with other people definitely helped me, especially. I don't want to speak for everyone else, but you know, like jamming with other people definitely helps like broaden that spectrum. Just be like, oh, I wouldn't have thought to play that riff like that, or I wouldn't have thought to use that rhythmic pattern with my rhythmic pattern. You know, like that's what I love about Pound. Your drummer is playing four different beats at once behind the beef that you're writing, and it all fits together, dude.
Yeah, yeah.
It all fits together. Yeah.
Garrett's turn.
Yeah, Garrett.
Before I forget, though, I have to say, Bad Brains, Rock for Light was the other album.
Dude.
I cannot not say that. The first time I heard Big Takeover, I think I punched a hole in my wall.
Yeah, I mean, I'd have to say probably the same vein as Sonny. Like, I went over to my neighbor's house, and he had this video, and it was Slipknot, Wait and Bleed. And I was like, oh, my God. I was listening to, like, NSYNC and before this, and I had no idea what the was going on.
Yeah,
and then it was downhill from there. I just rode the new metal wave all the way to metalcore and death metal, and then didn't get into hardcore until probably like 5 or 6 years ago. And then, now it's like
you trapped under ice, and you were like,
yeah,
dude,
blew my mind.
Yeah.
Blew my mind, and now it's like I can't get enough. Amazing.
It's kind of cool that you all have such similar stories and experiences with gateway bands.
Yeah.
I mean, a lot of people like to dog on gateway bands and trash on them, but you know, without bands like that, the majority of the people making heavy music today wouldn't be making that music, because
bands who are on our playlist coming up here,
like,
still
you can't just jump right into hard mode.
No,
like it just doesn't work.
Well, yeah,
like
we all started from somewhere, you know.
Yeah.
You got to have like your base.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, dude. And what's funny is, like, our generation now, like, whenever we think of those gateway bands, I know, like, classic rock, you know, it's where a lot of us started, was just classic rock, and then the 80s heavy hair metal stuff.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
Oh, yeah, dude. I like to get down on my Scorpions.
Well, and like one of the other things too is like when I was younger, when I first started getting into like punk and metal music, I didn't really have the internet. So I would just go to like Ranch Records.
Oh, dude, cassette tapes
and
for
just
days.
Go to the metal section, and I would just be like, well, this cover looks brutal as shit. I guess I'll buy this. And sometimes I hated the band, and other times I'd listen to that same album for like a month straight.
Did you guys get super into compilations? I was way into compilations.
Oh, yeah, dude. That's how I found out about Himza.
Yeah.
Was that Metal Underground DVD compilation.
Shout
that
out to
selling.
John Pettibone.
Yeah.
Papa Pettibone, man.
Yeah, Papa Pettibone. Yeah, dude.
Same
like
E-Tid.
Yeah.
Those were some of the best Ben shows. When I was in high school, it was Himza.
Yeah,
they were our favorite, hands down.
I got to see him here at the El Corazon not too long ago for that benefit show for the guy.
Yeah, Ryan George.
Yeah, yeah. And me, my dad, my fiance, and my brother, we all went to that show, and it was amazing because it had been like over 10 years since I'd seen Himza last time, and so when they were in Bend last. Yeah. Oh man, it was great. We're old, but we're still young. You know.
They call me a little old youngin.
Little old youngin.
So let's talk about this current tour that you guys are on right now.
Yeah.
What's going on with that? How did that come to be?
Denim Diaper Daddy's tour.
Denim Diaper Daddy's tour. We'll just say day one was amazing. Our singer, Micah, full on took a Chuck Norris to the face.
Yeah, I was about to say, that's quite the shiner you got there, man.
Yeah, that was our buddy Adam. He's a bigger guy with some heavy legs and a very hard kick. And I was coming into, you know, the downward swing of a headbang, and I just took the foot right to my face.
Oof. Did a Mortal Kombat wobble.
Oh, dude, I definitely, like, I looked like an MMA fighter about to get dropped for a second. But it happens every time we go on tour. The last time I got punched in the mouth at our first show and had a split lip that looked disgusting for the entire rest of the tour.
It's
so.
Tradition.
So is that going to be a thing at every stop on the tour? You just get kicked in the face?
I feel like it's like a bloodletting, you know? It's like our singer has to like sacrifice a body part so that like the rest of the tour doesn't suck. I don't know.
We need to make a sacrifice to the gods.
There you go.
Foes tradition.
No, yeah. It's been a great tour, even though we're only like 3 days in, you know, so it just started for us. But like it's been fun, been nothing but laughs, been nothing but good times,
huge.
Good vibes.
So the rest of the band, the main headliner and who we're supporting is Steak Sauce Mustache, and they're Brett, the guitar player, and Taylor and Joey and Eric. They're all our really good friends and they invited us along. So we kind of popped in a week late. But there's still a week left, and we're there to support their new album, Super Woke.
Yeah, and honestly, being on tour with those guys is such a privilege because, I mean, if you haven't seen them live, it's like they're the band you don't ever want to play after because you cannot beat their live show. It's like
you cannot.
You can't because it's like a spiritual experience. Like you watch these like people with their arms crossed in the back of the room, and out of nowhere they're running around like popping balloons on strangers. It's just ridiculous.
Oh yeah, and the gimmick that we got for this run since we've been on the road with them, it's been great because they have that toilet roll leaf blower gun deal, and there's a certain spot in the set where they no more wipey my diapy is what they're chanting, then the song kicks in and I come running out with a baby mask and the TP gun hooked up to a GoPro, and that gets last night that was awesome.
It gets them going.
Dude. You just got TP rolling everywhere.
Huge shout out to Steak Sauce Mustache for real.
No,
so just a
cool.
Shout out to you. I love making eye contact aggressively with your drummer during your guys' set.
Yeah, Dave.
Like, and he always, it's like he knows I'm doing it because he'll like turn his head and catch eye contact with me. Last night he totally like started busting up laughing.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
So good.
I did miss a beat.
With that belly button tattoo, bro. Just that big old belly tattoo. Oh, man. No, it's been a great tour, man. It's just been, like, real easy going. The weather's been very decent. You know, luckily, it's been very decent. It's nothing but clear roads and just laughs and good time. It's a nice escape from reality for a little bit, you know.
Feels like summer here.
We all got days.
Oh, yeah.
It's nice to get out.
Once again, we're talking to Foes from Bend, Oregon. Let's talk about the single a little bit. You guys have a new song out.
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay, what's the lowdown? What's the deets?
Free of Them.
So the song is called Free of Them, and it kind of just became one of those songs where, like, playing it live at shows and at practice, we were like, this would make a killer single. I think it, like, really shows exactly, like, what we're going for, but it's also just, like, in general, I'd say it's one of, like, I feel one of our heaviest songs.
Boy, that song in general, that's one of the only songs in our set that doesn't cater towards any side of the genres that we have. It explores it all. You've got, like, that opening riff is a technical, you know, grindy, and then we go into, like, the groove, and then it gets down into the beat down, you know, breakdown and all that stuff, so.
And by the end, you almost have, like, a weird hip-hop stompy vibe going.
Right, exactly. But yeah, like that song, it caters to every genre. It gives you the lowdown of what Foes is about. And the music video especially, I really enjoyed making the music video for
which
that.
Which was also, once again, I mean, the guys in Steak Sauce helped us put that together. I mean, Taylor came up and filmed it and edited it because, you know, it's Taylor. So not only does he run around in a leotard and act like a lunatic, but he's in, like, another band. He's super into, like, videography and art. And, I mean, the guy is an all-around just creative person. And, I mean, yeah, I don't know.
Yeah,
they've helped us out so much with stuff, and I feel like if it wasn't for them, we definitely wouldn't have some of the things going that we do.
You would never know that he's like the nicest guy ever.
No, because
you haven't seen him.
He looks like
stage.
A circus performer on stage.
Yeah, he's absolutely
He looks like a circus.
Yeah.
He is a circus
he is
on
a,
stage.
He is the embodiment of chaos. And then you talk to him off stage, and he's just like, oh, hi.
Hey, guys. Hey, what's going on?
But, like, this new song especially, so it's up on all streaming platforms. Big shout out to Hardcore Worldwide for putting it out on their website and so on and so forth. And like, I think it's only been 3-4 days now, and we've already got over 2,000 views on it, you know.
I mean, I guess to a lot of people that sounds really small, but for like,
for a small town band, you know, like,
for a bunch of local boys from Bend, Oregon, to even have like something, because I mean, I've been watching videos from Hardcore Worldwide for like ever.
Oh yeah, you're grateful if you get 100 views.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, totally. So it's just like, wow, 100 people checked out my band.
Like, yeah, I can hardly believe the amount of support we've gotten off of just releasing this a couple days ago, and people are blowing it up. It's getting shared all over through our small community, but it really means a lot. So thanks, everybody.
It's like, it's a little like, I don't know.
Humbling.
It's humbling.
Yeah.
Because, you know, I mean, you play music. Obviously, you have those days where you're just like, oh man, we up that whole set, or like, we're just not on par with like the game that other bands we play with are. And so like, to have this much support is just like, it's really keep like pushing us forward, not just as a band, but I would say as like people being more motivated about the music we're playing.
It's putting the kindling back on that fire.
Yeah.
Keeping the stoke high.
Totally. It's like we took a giant dump, and then this thing, people just loved it for some reason.
Micah, I kind of want to dig into what your lyrics are about, man. I mean, you're a very animated performer. When you play live, there's a presence, and there's some serious passion there. And so you have some really good things to say on stage, so I really want
to
dig in.
I mean, I like to have lyrics where for like me, or like, I mean, these guys, I mean, they understand exactly where I'm coming from. But I also like it to be for like a listener, somebody listening to the song, they can interpret various things out of it. So it's like, you know, it's not just fully directed at one issue, but the song Free of Them is kind of just a concept of like, I mean, all of us as people, we've lost friends to suicide or drug overdose, or, you know, just have friends who have drifted away due to like dealing with gnarly depression and stuff like that. So the song's kind of a level playing field of like just being a human and dealing with self-doubt and reality and how it gets overbearing at times. And that's like, you know, there's that one part, one of the lyrics in the song is lift the hammer, bow my head. And like, I wrote that because I went to work one day and I had just a week stressed out about a bunch of stuff. And it's like, well, I got to lift the hammer. And like, you know, you just put your head down and go to work. So it's kind of a reach out of just accepting that like, that is a normal thing that people go through. And that the end lyric is a remind yourself it's a short walk to the edge. Because it is. It does not take too many steps to get from functional human being to edge of a building, or, you know. So yeah, I mean, that's kind of just where it's at. So I guess it's doing vocals has always been a vent for me of like how I'm feeling about things. So I like to visualize doing vocals that way. It's like, oh, this is all the stuff weighing on my mind, and I'm just going to like vomit it as aggressively as possible and get it out of me.
Like, we want people to connect with the lyrics in the way that like, dude, life is shit, you know, but we're all here to have a good time. We're all here to survive. We're all here to live, and we're all in the same boat. We are literally on the same boat. You know, like, we're all here together, and like, it's reality gets tough, but you got to have that inner strength to push past it. And we're all here together, and we're all here for each other in order to do that. And I know me, especially whenever I help write lyrics or a lot of the lyrics that we have for Foes, you know, it's like very reality based and like what's in the back of everyone's mind, but no one wants to come forth and say it because we all have that standard of like,
yeah. And I mean, you know, it's just one of the things that appealed to me about punk rock and metal in the first place was just this like full blown honesty.
Yeah. Nobody likes to talk about when they're like going to die. Or when you feel like you want to die.
Or the fact that there's like police brutality or suicides or anything like that. But like, I mean, you don't talk about it. You still think about it.
Yeah.
So sometimes I like to scream about it.
All you can think about. So this is the way that we get it out.
Yeah.
And also, not only like what Garrett said, not only the way that we get it out, but also the way to let people know that you're not alone. We're going through the same we're all in this together, you know, and just kick that 40 back and have a good time, you know?
We're all about just, you know, really having a good time and trying to escape the reality that we all exist in. But
yeah, and I mean, living in a smaller, frozen, frigid town with not too much culture really going on can get really hard when you're an artistic person and you're like, oh man, I wish I could go do this and this and this, but you can't, so you kind of have to make it for yourself. So it's definitely like a DIY, raw honesty kind of vibe for me when I go into writing.
I think a part of that is the reason why so many good bands come from very small, isolated towns, because it's like, well, I play guitar, I want to be in a band, I want to be in a black metal band. Well, there's no other guys that play black metal in town, so, but I can go make music with this drummer that's really into hardcore.
Yeah.
And like, my options are, I can either A, not be in a band, band, or B, go alter be in a band with this guy that has some other influences. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's why you end up with these really cool, very unique sounding bands from a lot of really small towns. You know, it kind of forces people to come together and create some new things because they're coming from different backgrounds and different influences. Well, and, I mean, and there's just nobody around.
Yeah. I mean, you even brought that up last time you were in band. You were like, every time we come to this town, we end up playing with some like random crazy new band. Like last time you guys were there, you played with Kronk Men.
That band rules.
Yeah, dude.
That band is so cool.
And they've been around forever. I was going to Kronk Men shows when I was like 15.
Yeah.
You know, that's like
still around, like,
and they're still as
crazy
good,
as ever.
And they're still as weird, and they're genuinely nice dudes.
Yeah. To pull down the fourth wall a little bit here, my inbox is slammed on a weekly basis with bands that sound the same. Everybody's reinventing the wheel over and over again. And so whenever I hear a band that is doing something really unique and fresh and completely different, if I hear a band and I have a really hard time describing how they sound, I get really excited about that. And most of the time when I come across bands like that, it's all in the small towns. Kronk Men, I have no idea how to describe that band. It's like a combination of surf rock and punk and like spastic psychedelic
experimental
stuff.
Something about them
kind
of reminds me of the Melvins.
Yeah, totally. Mm-hmm.
Like,
yeah.
But
it's,
like,
it's got some
with
grunge
this crazy,
in there.
Like, acid surf,
but they get heavy.
Yeah.
They get so heavy at parts. I mean, it's almost like a punk hardcore influence here and there. It's wild, man. And I think the last time we were in town, we played with Zarlok
and the Spacemen.
We played that show with you guys.
That those band was cool,
dude. Those guys were so sick. And what's cool about those kids is they're literally just a bunch of skater kids from Madras.
Yeah.
That
is it Monkey?
Yeah.
Monkey plays drums, right?
Yeah, Monkey plays drums,
like,
and
one
then
of the DIY skate shop in Bend called Soul Skates.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, dude. Like, dude, no, those guys blew me away.
The
totally
guitarist
like
from that band came and saw us while we were down in Sacramento out of nowhere. I couldn't believe the guy walked in the door. But by far, one of my favorite performances that I've seen out of a local band. Yeah. Like that, such a cool project. And that's the thing. That's why it's really important for national acts to pay more attention to these small towns and like go through, take the time to hit them. Because it really helps prop up the entire music scene. You know, a huge touring band comes through and plays in Seattle, nobody cares. A huge touring band comes through and plays in Bend, Oregon.
Oh, everyone's
coming after that show.
And comes out of the woodwork to see those guys.
And the entire local music scene gets a major boost that it rides for months.
Yep.
Yeah, we ride that wave of excitement back to practice, and it makes us want to do more stuff.
Exactly.
Just like, pumps us up, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, like I was saying, I mean, growing up as a kid and not really having as much, I mean, it's so easy to find so much new music nowadays.
Oh,
you just
so
pop
saturated
on like a playlist on Spotify or YouTube and you find 20 bands you've never heard of.
Yeah.
But for me growing up, it was those touring bands that would come through town. I'd be like, never heard this. I'm going to buy all your merch because now I'm obsessed with you. And like, I think that's, like you said, that's one of the reasons it's so important.
It means more
for those bands to roll through smaller areas, like, and they just get bypassed. I mean, there's so many tours where like you get Portland and Seattle, and then they're down in California, and it's like, well, you couldn't make it to any of those.
Yeah, so when they hit Bend, we like really appreciate that.
Well, that's why it's so important that bands in small towns get out and tour, because now you're ambassadors for your town.
Yep.
When you go out and you play shows at venues and you talk to the bookers and promoters, you tell them about your town and you tell them how awesome it is and how people will come out and support it. You know, there are shows in Bend, Oregon. It all comes back through, man. It all goes back to what Brandon was saying about, you know, it's all interconnected. We're all in it together. So, you know, it's really cool that you guys are going to be able to hopefully send some more stuff down to Bend.
Yeah, and on that topic right there, just want to give a big shout out to mine and my dad's company, Coma Bookings and Promotion, and also Lovecraft Collective. They're a newer booking and promotions company out of Bend, Oregon, and they're starting to do some good stuff out of the Domino Room. Yeah. They were the ones that set up your last show there.
Yeah.
So a big shout out to those companies right there for keeping the scene alive in Bend, Oregon, for sure.
Garrett, the dude who does Lovecraft, really, really, really cares about the local scene and trying to get as many acts to come through as possible. And I mean, he posts all the time asking like, what bands do you guys want to see, because I'm going to try to get them here. Can't promise I will, but I'm going to try.
It's all about that guarantee.
You know, and it's really cool whenever you come across people that are that genuinely into it, like willing to put in the work that it takes to make stuff happen in their small towns. And, you know, it's cool when you can finally drag a band out from the other side of the country to play in your small town because you've been hounding them for years. Like, it happens, man.
And people go buck wild over that.
Dude, look 100%. Like when Despised Icon rolled through Bend.
Yeah, oh, God.
I think I punched at least three people in the face. That was the first time I've legitimately gone like full 18-year-old roundhouse kicking cartwheel hardcore mode in so long.
Was Micah one of the people that you punched in the face? I know he gets punched in the face a lot. So.
I have no idea. It was really dark in there, so it's probably.
I do, though. I get hit.
It's
so
all a
much.
Blur.
All right. Well, before I let you guys get out of here, there's one last question that we always like to ask, and I know one of you guys is going to knock this out of the park. This is the scar question.
Uh-oh.
Pick a scar on your body. Man. If you can show it to me without removing clothing and tell me how you got it.
I'm going to go with Garrett's forehead.
Yeah, I have a giant scar down the middle of my forehead, and it's like a hard story to tell, but it's also funny. It was a couple days before my brother's funeral because he committed suicide, and that's another like whole theme around this band is the way that I can remove some of that from my life. But I was like really f***ed up, and my friends and I went out to Denny's, and we were wasted. We both ordered, you know, the lumberjack slam, and
you do when you go to Denny's,
of course. And he only eats scrambled eggs. And so the waiter arrives, and I got fried eggs. She switches the order around, and he's like, hey, those are my eggs. And I'm like, no, they're my eggs. And I scarf him down. And then he's like, we're fighting after this. And I was like, yeah, we are fighting after this. And so before we even leave the doorway, we start full-on brawling in the Denny's. And like, eventually, he grabs my legs and trips me. I fall to my knees and boom, slam my forehead directly into the door jamb. And I'm just like spurting blood from my forehead.
Head wound.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Gnarly.
Brawling in the Denny's.
8 stitches later, everything was fine. I woke up and I went to the funeral. That's my scar story.
All right. That's a gnarly one. That might be one of the top ones I've ever
heard.
Yeah,
I don't know if I can top that, dude.
That's impressive.
I mean, I'm like doing construction and stuff. Like, I mean, I'm covered in scars and whatnot. And I think one of the funniest ones.
But you don't look like Harry Potter now.
Yeah. No. Okay. I think one of my most brutal scars that I had. I'm wearing pants right now, so I can't pull it out, but it's on the top of my kneecap, and it was a razor blade cut. I was cutting some carpet and the knife slipped and went all the way in. Like, I had fat poking out of this cut. It was just squirting blood.
So you're
just
tearing up some carpet and it just went all the way in.
Went all the way in, man. Dude, just like totally messed me up. And I didn't have anything to go to the hospital with or the ER room with, and so I went into my stepmom's purse and I grabbed a maxi pad because that's the only thing I could think of that would soak up the blood. Yeah. And so I'm like hauling ass down to the ER station, like gushing blood into this maxi pad with this like 1.5 inch, 2 inch deep cut in my leg. And we get to the ER center. It was the fire hall down in Sun River, the fire station. Yeah. And because they had paramedics there, and we tell them what's going on, dudes just started laughing. They just started laughing because they couldn't get over the fact that I had a maxi pad on my freaking knee, gushing blood.
Well, hey, man, you know what they say. If it works,
it works.
It's not stupid.
There you go, right?
That's a valid point.
But out of all the scars that I've got, I mean, like, I've shot myself with a nail gun so many times, dude. So, I mean, like, my scar stories are kind of lame, especially in comparison
to
that.
Yeah, you've never brawled in a Denny's.
Yeah, yeah.
Foes, bro, have you ever brawled in a Denny's?
Sonny, you got any good ones?
No.
Baby face Sonny.
I've got a scar on the side of my face here from when I was a kid. I had chicken pox and I dug them out of my side of my face.
Gnarly.
You would do that.
I did. I dug them all the way out. And actually, the first show.
You've got some scars from those sweet three eyebrow rings you used to have back in high school.
I was talking to a couple guys outside and they're like, what's up with that little scar on the side of your face? And I was like, well, you know, it's kind of stupid, but I dug some chicken pox out of my face after my mom told me not to itch them.
I don't know why that's so gross to me,
But yeah, that's pretty gnarly.
It was. That's why it's still there.
Drug free and everything. Yeah.
Completely.
And then I mean, I have more scars than I can count because I've been skating since I was 11. So my elbows and knees are all multicolored. But I work in a kitchen, so I have burns everywhere.
And he got Chuck Norris in the face first day of the tour.
Dude, we're gonna take a picture of your face from after you got hit and put it up on the website.
Oh my god,
that's gotta go on.
But you got fresh pics. Yeah.
Oh, you gotta see the freshie. I dove headfirst into a rock this summer down at the river, but I would have to say that out of all my scars, the best one, just because I really should have gone and got stitches and just didn't care because being 20 years old skater kid, I was just like, eh. It look like a badass. So there was an alley jam in Bend. So a couple companies put on this like gnarly skate jam.
Sick.
And me and my buddy Alex Blondie went at like 8 o'clock in the morning because we wanted to get there early. And we're like, I don't remember what we were drinking, and we were like smoked a bunch of weed. I think
probably
we were
Pabst or Rainier.
I think we were drinking a 40 of Old English. I think we were drinking Brass Monkeys.
Oh yeah,
dude, that'll get you there.
And nice. It had rained a little bit, and they had built this massive 18-foot wall ride ramp. And I was like, dude, I'm gonna go try to do something on this. And
send it, bro.
I slipped out, and when I did, I like rode down on my ass, but my hand went under my butt. This hand right here, so I have it's right there on my palm. But they hadn't put the second layer of masonite on, so there's just this fat piece of like rusty sheet metal at the bottom.
Oh, yeah.
And I remember I slid down and I got up. My buddy Alex was like, oh. And I was like, what? And I looked down, and like before I even felt pain, I was just like pouring blood out of my hand. And one of the dudes who was putting it on owned a restaurant and was like, oh my god, don't sue me. So he like ran me into the back of this restaurant. There's like all these like Asian women working at the Thai food restaurant, and they're all just like staring at me, and I'm just laughing. I'm like, and like he takes me over to like the first aid kit. I'm like, I'm already like half drunk and stoned at this point. It's like not even 10 a.m. And so he gets me like wrapped up and like with a gauze pad. And so at the time there was this girl I was into, and she was like, oh, I'm going to come watch you skate. So I was like, well, obviously I'm still going to skate now because, you know, guys are just geniuses. And they had a mini ramp. And so I have a bandana tied around this flesh wound. I'm pounding Jaeger bombs out of a dude's hydro flask.
Dude, you're
and
disgusting.
Every single time I fell on the ramp, like blood just sprayed out of the bandage. So like people are skating this ramp.
These are
my
your role
blood
model,
is
folks.
All f***ing over it. Yeah, so that's my scar story.
And that's how you got the nickname Hepatitis Micah.
Yeah,
Hepatitis.
The best part was my mom was like, you need to go get a tetanus shot. And I waited like 3 days. I didn't know you like had to do it in a certain amount of time. So like my dad and me like roll over to like the emergency clinic like maybe it was two days afterwards. And the lady's like, yeah, it's too late. He looked at me when we get back in the car, and he's like, lie to your mother.
You know, my kid fell down the skateboard wheelie board ramp here not too long ago and cut up his hand pretty bad on a piece of rusty metal. And I didn't think it was too big of a deal, but I figured we'd bring him in now.
My dad's also the kind of dude who's like shot like you've done, like shoots a nail gun nail through his like thumb and just keeps working.
Oh, my God, dude. The first time I shot myself with a nail gun, it was this finger right here. You could still see the scar. And it went right into the knuckle, dude, and it just started squirting blood, all on stain, finish, trim, and everything. Oh, so I'm like freaking out. So I wrap it up. I had a show that week, so I had to play drums with this busted ass finger, and then literally the next week after that, shot myself in the same spot with a nail gun, dude. And then a month after that, I was putting on another piece of corner. Nail went through my thumb, dude. Like,
you're really bad with the
so
nail gun.
It was just like for 2 months something was going wrong there, dude. Something was going
Some
wrong.
So
energy.
What we're learning right now is that Foes is a band that does not learn from their mistakes.
this is a fact.
That is
100% a fact.
Very, very true.
We do bring TP on the road though, so that is one mistake we learned from.
Yeah. We don't
smart
we
man.
Don't like to poop ourselves.
Well, gentlemen, thank you very much for taking the time to sit down, come up, and hang out with us for a little bit.
Thank
Appreciate
you.
It.
You thank you, the beard. This.
On the KISW, right?
Yeah, there you go.
Hey.
Any, last-minute words for the Pacific Northwest audience?
Come out to our shows and
come
then
out to,
don't
yeah, our
try
shows.
Not to get punched in the face. But you can try to punch Micah in the face or kick him in the
Please
face.
Please kick Micah in the
yeah.
face.
Just
I need to even out the other side. Right now I kind of look like a f***ed up human yin-yang.
Dude, you got kind of a Two-Face thing going on right now.
Dude, really?
Harvey Two-Face, dude.
Harvey Two-Face Barry.
No, I think me definitely, like, thank you. Thank all of you out there supporting us and pushing us to go further and giving us the drive to go further. And thank you. Thank you.
I read this really cool quote yesterday that most successful artists are only successful because of their friends and the people who supported them. So, support local music. Support your friends. Buy their artwork. Support your local skate shops. Support your local bands. Support your local bearded radio host.
Thank you, gentlemen. Appreciate it.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.